Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, the great Eric Metaxas joins us for a candid conversation about President Trump and so much more. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com, tpusa.com. And this conversation with Eric Metaxas happened at the Great Liberty University on the heels of the Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty. Enjoy this conversation with Eric Metaxas, exclusively aired right here. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this conversation with the incredible and the amazing Eric Metaxas.
Thank you very much.
So Eric, you recently, we won't say any names, in a conversation as to why, was it Christians or conservatives shouldn't vote for Trump? You were on the opposite side.
I was on the opposite side. I was at John Brown University in Siloam Springs, Arkansas, and there was kind of a panel, you know, a discussion. You can't call it a debate, but effectively, I guess it was that, with David French, and we were socially distanced, like, you know, 1,000 feet across the stage from each other. And when he was speaking, I had to wear a mask. And when I was speaking, he had to wear a mask.
Are you kidding me?
And you know, guess what? It worked. No one died. So thus far, fingers crossed,
And you were 900 yards away?
We were 900 yards away. I had to use a very powerful scope to see him. But it was an amazing experience. No, and I you know, advocated that Christians not only should vote for Trump, but must vote for Trump. And he advocated the opposite. And a good time was had by all.
Yeah. So the essence of his position, we get these emails a lot on our podcast, is that Christians should not justify Donald Trump's actions or words.
Here's the issue. If you really demonize somebody in the way that they've demonized Trump, such that he is patently a monster, then you say, I can't vote for a monster. I can't vote for Hitler. I can't vote for a man who is publicly cruel and who is a liar and blah, 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 blah. And I would agree with that, right? Except it's preposterous. In other words, whatever they cite is either at best subjective or utterly false. And so when you call somebody a liar, he is a liar. What is a liar? When Barack Obama says, you can keep your plan. If you like your plan, you can keep it. So is he now like he's a liar forever? Like he's just branded as a liar? You know, the idea that Trump speaks hyperbolically, comedically, nobody who doesn't understand that will be able to deal with it. And the mainstream media has become ultra serious, so serious that they can't appreciate nuance or inflection, whatever. That it's happened to me. You know, you crack a joke, like half the time I'm speaking semi-jokingly, and you realize people are going to interpret it in a flat-footed way, and they're going to say, you said this. You said you declared Jesus was white. It's like, no, that was kind of like a setup for like a punchline of an MMA, but they don't care. So articles get written. That, of course, is Trump's life. So whatever he does gets so twisted. So the argument is not an argument. I mean, if you are convinced that he is the devil 2.0, well, I guess I wouldn't vote for him either. But I think that the facts or the points that folks like French make just strike me as pure subjectivism, that they just don't like the cut of his jib and they inflate it into him being some kind of a Pol Pot figure.
No, yeah, but was it policy focused at all or was it all personality?
Well, that's the issue. In other words, it didn't strike me as being policy focused. It struck me as, for example, one big thing that he did, which I was not prepared for because it strikes me as just so crazy. He inflates the boogeyman of the alt-right and on and on. And I just thought, what are you talking about? I mean, we have Antifa and BLM mobs burning down America And you're bringing up this thing that I don't know anybody that, you know, they say, oh, yes, there are alt-right riots and they're all right. You know,
what is he talking about?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Dates, locations, names, people.
It's just absolutely. And then another big talking point is that, you know, Trump's main man, you know, Steve Bannon said that he wanted, you know, to Breitbart to be a platform for the alt-right. And it's kind of like that's the QED. And then I have to kind of point out, well, okay, by the way, Trump fired Steve Bannon, number one. Number two, I don't even know what you're talking about, even if it were true. So it's become, I'm not kidding. It's a fiction. It's a narrative. This is kind of where the left is today. But it's a huge fiction. It's a huge narrative filled with emotion. There's no real arguing with it because logic is almost kicked away as an oppressive patriarchal Western construct.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And so it's got to be about somebody insulted my daughter who is black, and therefore every other Trump supporter must also be racist, and, you know, on and on and on. And you can't argue with that.
That's very dangerous group identity, almost, the generalization aspect.
Well, of course it is.
When is the perfect time to plant trees and shrubs? Big box store experts will tell you any time, or they'll say, I don't know. But the best time is actually in the fall, which means now. So now's the time to go to fastgrowingtrees.com. This is a really fun service. Listen carefully. Skip the big box stores and head to fastgrowingtrees.com, the world's largest online nursery. No more waiting in lines, messy cars, and digging through a lackluster selection. Just go to fastgrowingtrees.com and choose from thousands of varieties of trees, shrubs, and plants expertly curated to thrive in your area and delivered to your door in just a couple days. I can tell you, I love fastgrowingtrees.com. I've seen them do amazing things for so many people. Whether you're looking for shade, privacy, fruit trees, or just an added color to your yard, go to fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. Now through November 15th, you get 10% off. If you guys want trees on your property, it is the only way to go at fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. And if you have no yard, no problem. They also have indoor patio plants. So check it out right now, fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. So here's where I'm at on this with some of these conservative Never Trumpers. There's not that many of them, actually. The data shows that Trump's the most popular Republican president running for re-election, even more so than George W. Bush, ever since Ronald Reagan. So they're just louder and they're given a bigger platform because of how much the media hates President Trump.
Right.
And so there's nothing new about this idea of, you know, Republicans trying to play righteous, self-righteous about it. What I'm just trying to square here is, for those people of the world, the David Frenches, I think, and I don't want to impose too much of it, it's almost a pseudo-intellectualism that they have, though. That's
another way to talk about it. In other words, it strikes me, because I grew up in a working-class environment, by going to Yale and living in Manhattan and traveling in these circles, I feel like I'm bilingual, right? So when Trump speaks with his hyperbole and his almost like a Jackie Mason humor shtick and the bluster and whatever, I get that language, right? I don't read it like a dull PBS intern would read it, you know? And I think that what happened is what Trump has done is he's flushed out. You also see this in the Christian faith that you flush out those people who want their thing to be respectable. Now there's nothing wrong with that per se, but they are unwilling ever to ally themselves with someone they find somewhat embarrassing socially. In other words, if you're not a Beltway intellectual, if you can't parry with George Will or Ross Douthat or whatever, you embarrass them. And so in a sense, they have the same elitist view of the so-called deplorables.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That Hillary Clinton did. And that's where I think this is broken down. That's where you can almost see that these are the people who they were fashioning for themselves a kind of intellectually respectable conservatism. Now, we know it's intellectually respectable, but the point is that everyone who adopts it doesn't need themselves to be intellectually respectable.
I think there's a level deeper here, though, that Trump has signaled a shift, that some of these pseudo-intellectuals on the conservative side have been sort of wrong about a couple things. And not just sort of wrong, but
very wrong.
And especially on the issues of international trade, middle class,
oh,
exporting not just exporting jobs but livelihoods overseas. 15 million
no,
jobs.
No. This is what I'm saying. Is like he has.
But he's thoroughly, so dogmatic about it.
But he has thoroughly embarrassed them.
That's right.
He's humiliated them. He has pointed out that the so-called Republicans have been as bad or worse or no better than the Democrats on some of the most fundamental issues, which, you know, I've heard people over the years say, oh, both parties are the same, both parties are the same. And I've said, well, you've got to be kidding. That's not true. That's not true. And then you realize, like, on a lot of stuff, that is precisely correct. If you're willing to play patty cake with the satanic monster called China, communist China, and you're willing to be seduced by the free market as though it is a god, that if we introduce the free market, that suddenly they're going to sprout tricorn hats and muskets and they're going to recite the Declaration of Independence. The free market can't do that. You need virtue.
That's exactly right.
You know, which
right.
is why we're at the Falkirk Center here. If you take virtue out of the free market, if you take virtue out of the democratic
process, that's exactly
right. The whole thing breaks down, but none of them knew that. The Democrats didn't know it, and the Republicans didn't know it, and that's why today we are where we are.
And if I were to use a term, tracing back or contact trace back, that's not probably the right term in today's time, but whatever.
No.
A little probably too soon to use that. But going back 40 years ago, you had strict libertarian ideologues pairing up with corporate interests, and they believed that change came through laissez-faire economic trade policy.
Correct.
When in reality, that's fine. But if you're exporting into a civilization that does not believe in the Western ideal, made in the image of God, then that change is actually, it's just going to make them richer and give them more of what they already have.
And it's also going to give them more power to oppress the weak.
What they already have is tyranny. So it makes their tyranny more effective.
Okay. And that's precisely what's
happened. Commercialize their tyranny.
And again, if you make an idol of the free market, you say, we're going to take morality out of it. Okay. So let's say you can manufacture ovens for the Nazis to burn Jews. You're going to make money. Are you going to be bothered about the morality of it? Well, most people would know that that's the dirtiest money. That's the devil's money. I won't take that money. But what happens when you're dealing with China and they have Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps being treated? I mean, look, the ones that are not murdered for their organs. I mean, this is so horrific. It's almost impossible to believe. Murdered for their organs so that the Chinese government can make $500,000 off of a human being that they've murdered. Okay. That's happening. So do you trade with someone like that? Do you trade with someone that is using those people they don't murder as slave laborers? Do you buy Nike shoes? Do you go to NBA games? If you don't have those conversations in a culture like this, we deserve to unravel ourselves. We don't deserve the freedom and the prosperity.
But we're only having this conversation because of Trump. No one else was willing to have that conversation.
Precisely.
And I came from that old school of conservatism in my early years of the David Frenchites, which is you must worship free trade economics as if it is dogma of religion. You can never question it. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce must always be correct.
Right.
They've never been wrong. How dare you? You know, Trump's the worst thing ever because he's calling out China for what they're doing. And then you actually take a drive from Manhattan to Milwaukee and get off the expressway and then just go into these old towns in Ohio and Indiana where there were these destroyed factories. And they say, that's a good thing because we have Ricardo's law of comparative advantage. Don't you understand? Like, okay, so we get piles full of plastic and the church there. Then go visit the church and go through the registry in 1980 and go through the registry now. That's now for people of faith. David French is one. He should look at that. The registry in those churches down 90%. So it's not just the factory closed. It's the entire middle part of the country, the faith. And then so they say, well, that's far too materialist of you. They say, oh, no, the materialism doesn't play that big of a role. You're trying to tell me when you just tell 600 people earning $30 an hour, your jobs are now in Wuhan. Go find something else to do.
Right.
And you do that for 15 million people. That's going to land perfectly. Today's sponsor is one we've been working with for a while now, Vincero. Vincero creates the most incredible looking watches for an incredible price point. Seriously, watches that are stunning and that are under $200. The guys on their team sent over some watches that Mr. Producer, he wears them all the time. It's Vincero, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Vincero offers free shipping, 30-day returns, and guarantees your watch for 2 years. There is a reason why they have over 20,000 five-star reviews, because you won't find a better-made watch for this good of a price anywhere else. So take advantage of 15% off everything on their website. Vincero has styles for men. It is VinceroWatches.com, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Like I said, these timepieces you will enjoy every single day. If you don't, Benchero will make it right. That is their promise. If you don't love it, they will make it right by you. Go shop Benchero. BencheroWatches.com. Do not pay full price on these beautiful timepieces. Take advantage of your exclusive discount and get up 15% off your order. BencheroWatches.com.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because if you believe in the free market, you know, you have to deal with the morality. At some point, you bump into is cruelty to animals, is cruelty to human beings? What are the things that bump up against this idea of a pure free market? And if China isn't all of those things rolled into one times a billion, then what is there? So how is it conceivable that only this president had the courage and the wisdom to see this and to begin to deal with it? I mean, if he did nothing else, that would be magnificent.
Well, and he's done so much more than that. And also, I mean, he's exposed the fraud of the Republican Party, of being purchased by the tech companies, of being an incestuous swamp within Washington, D.C., literally. And you wrote a whole book called Donald Drains the Swamp,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a whole book.
Satire.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I don't think we do enough satire.
I've written three humor books, Donald the Caveman books, and they're meant to, in a way, explain all this stuff on the simplest level so that people realize I'm not crazy. This is what is happening. But even a kid can understand it. And there's nothing vile in the books. So you can use them as kids' books because they look like kids' books. But I think that most Americans kind of get this. They get this stuff. And I think, you know, people are willing to give stuff a pass for a number of decades. And then at some point, the evidence is in. I mean, when you look at the Democratic-run cities and the trillions that were spent, the war against poverty, at some point, you look at it and you go, this has failed. We now know this has failed. And Black Americans have been, treated as suckers. And now there needs to be a reckoning. They need to reject it.
So to shift gears for a second, you had a great interview on Tucker Carlson about the church. There are some pastors that come out and they say that the church has been the number one arbiter of white supremacy in our country.
Yeah.
And you refuted this really well. What was your argument?
I mean, look.
You were terrific.
There are several arguments. I'll simply say this. When I saw that church using the language,
it's a New York-based church.
Yeah, yes. Well, look, they're a Jesuit lost church already, but I'm saying that when you see the Church of Jesus Christ using certain kinds of woke language, okay, when they talk about white supremacy, white nationalism, and so on and so forth, white privilege, it is no different. It is exactly what the Nazis did to the churches in the 30s. They did not say, we want to abolish the church, come and worship Satan, deny God. No. They infiltrated because they said, we're going to use these gullible people and we're going to ride along with them for a while, or we're going to let them ride along with us for a while to stay out of trouble. It's kind of like paying, you know, protection money. It's like you play ball with us, you put your Black Lives Matter and your flag and your rainbow flag outside of that, and we'll leave you alone. But the point is, the people that are asking them to do this are themselves Marxists, cultural Marxists, who do not believe in God, who do not believe in the dignity of the individual, do not believe in that we're made in the image of God. So if you go along with this, which the German churches did and which many American churches are doing, you're riding on the back of a tiger. This tiger intends to eat you, not to make friends with you. And so this is something that is so ugly, because if you're an atheist, you don't even have a reason to believe racism is wrong. Think of the irony of this. In other words, it's only the churches that said,
that's exactly
we're made in
the
image of God. We have to abolish the slave trade. We have to abolish slavery.
And they
have to work to abolish, the Jim Crow laws and so on and so forth. That all came out of the churches. Martin Luther King knew that. And since the 60s, we've gotten a different narrative. It's the 1619 narrative. And the ignorance of the churches to buy into this, thinking they're somehow playing
more
along with somebody who will help them, they are signing their own death warrants. And it's the death warrant of Western civilization, let's face
it. Well, the Bible built Western civilization.
Thank you very much. That's exactly correct. I think I said that on that show. It's kind of funny, because that's the point. It's like, you reject that and you reject God, then you tell me, on what principles are you going to build your civilization except power and blood?
But the horrific irony is, the churches and the Bible built Western civilization. Now churches are actively involved in destroying Western civilization.
Yeah, well, some churches, and I would argue those churches aren't real churches. You know, they're the phony churches. They're the same churches that operated when Wilberforce was fighting the slave trade. And they, the Church of England, for example, owned plantations in the West Indies. In other words, there's this thing called hypocrisy, and it's existed in the church from the beginning. Judas was pretending to be on board. That has always existed, but it's always been the role of real people of faith and lovers of truth to speak up mm-hmm. as clearly and loudly and courageously as they can. Bonhoeffer did. They didn't listen to him. The question is today, will people in the churches wake up to what's being done to them by the atheist left? And, you know, that remains to be seen.
And it's being infiltrated at the very highest level.
Oh,
and you're seeing there's the black square, take a knee, racial penance movement.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd on many levels, but I think just the whiff of it, just the fact that it smells like what happened to the churches in the 30s in Germany ought to be enough for people to say, I don't trust this.
So a lot of churches still closed. As we just mentioned, a lot of churches are funding the BLM Incorporated nonsense. And this all kind of comes to this idea of whether we want Western civilization to continue to exist. You wrote a phenomenal book about this. Can you just take a step back? What is the West? And why is it so important we preserve it?
Well, let's think of it this way. I mean, being Greek, I'm very happy to say that the West, in a way, is the confluence of Athens and Jerusalem, right? You have a lot of good things that came out of...
And Scotland.
I forgot Scotland. You have a kind of...
Being a Kirk and 90% Scottish.
I know.
We
can't go too far afield. I'm just going to stick to Athens and Jerusalem. But the point is that something happened that results in what we call Western Christendom, which was, one of the greatest cultures in the history of the world. And that out of that came this thing we call the United States of America. Now, it was the idea that we can govern ourselves and be genuinely free. It was discovered fairly recently. It was put into practice, fairly recently. And it has created an opportunity so that an infinite number of people could be raised out of poverty. There's no zero-sum game. We're able to create wealth. We're able to spread freedom. It's a magical moment in history. And we've seen the full flower of that in the United States of America. And in the last 60 years, people have begun to try to undo the whole thing and to discredit the whole thing. And that's what we're fighting now.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. You know this. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, and labor regulations, and more. HR manager salaries are not cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding or terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day. Through month-to-month, there's no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk, spelled BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. And the tragedy is that so many people are being taught that everything around us is not just bad, it's the worst thing ever. That the West was a mistake, it's a colonialist exploitation experiment, must be destroyed at all costs. And this is where you get Michel Foucault and Jacques Derrida, the postmodernists.
All of these people should move to North Korea because they will see how
some of them would actually enjoy that if they were in charge.
Well, no, but I mean, that's the whole point, is that if you want to play that game, in other words, you have a choice between truth and liberty, or this ugly, cynical, ultimately satanic game where some people will have the power and they will make all the decisions and everyone else will be ruled and governed from above. That's the choice. Now, if there were another choice, which they sometimes pretend there is, some kind of soft socialism or something, I would say, well, maybe. But the fact of the matter is, there is not. And these people, animated usually by a kind of just pure emotional anger against something. Maybe it's daddy, maybe it's, I don't know what it is, but they have allowed themselves to be angry and to point the finger at others. And in effect, to scapegoat others, rather than say, I'm the problem, I'm a sinner, I need God, the problem is somebody else. Obviously, the Nazis did that with the Jews. It's happened through history.
You Soviets find someone, did it, the Chinese did
right?
It.
So you find someone to blame and you demonize them, and we know how that goes, and that's the path that the radical left has launched us on. And if we don't fight it with everything we have, we will lose, the greatest country in history, which gives the most promise and opportunity to those who are without, to those who are not flourishing. In other words, if you actually care about the poor, if you believe Black Lives Matter, you must speak against the organization called Black Lives Matter. You must vote for the president who is going to create opportunity and jobs. And that's the great irony.
What we've been given, and it's a gift we've been given by generations prior to us, is more in jeopardy than ever before. And the real unfortunate part of it is that it's so self-inflicted, is that it's so internal. And it's going to be one of the first times we've seen in, the modern era, where it's not conquest, it's not anything, but it's just an internal.
But it was predicted by Abraham Lincoln. You know that.
Nietzsche also predicted it too.
Well, Nietzsche comes after Lincoln.
I know.
So he stole, just like but Biden stole.
Nietzsche predicted the communist carnage.
Is that right? Well, that I didn't quite know, but I guess the reason I say Lincoln predicted it.
By proclaiming the death of God.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. He said,
what comes after this is not good. Like, it wasn't
right.
A celebration.
That's,
it was a eulogy.
Right.
It wasn't
that's
a.
Right.
Anyway.
No, the only reason I bring up Lincoln is because Lincoln gave a speech in the Springfield Young Men's Lyceum, I think it was. He was a very young man, not much older than you. And he gave a speech where he talked about the slow artillery of time. He basically makes the case that if we, the people, don't keep the republic, in the words of
Ben Franklin, if you can keep it,
if we don't do that, we will destroy ourselves. But there is no way anyone else can destroy us. It has to come from within. So Ozgin has wrote a book called A Free People's Suicide, that it must be by suicide that we destroy ourselves. So that's simply to reiterate what you said.
So any books you're working on currently? Got another?
Yes, sir.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
I have a book. Yeah, I have a book coming out in February, which is a literary memoir. It's utterly apolitical, and it's not, it's only slightly spiritual. It's the story of my life from birth till the moment around my 25th birthday when I had an utterly miraculous Jesus dream that changed my life completely and forever. But I wanted to write a book to reach out to people who wouldn't read like a spiritual memoir. It's just a story of growing up as the son of European immigrants. My dad came from Greece. My mom came from Germany. And there's a lot of humor in it. There's a lot of crazy stories and stuff growing up in that world. And then going to a place like Yale and not really fitting in. The title of the book is Fish Out of Water, A Search for the Meaning of Life. And the fact is
it's like Man's Search. It's like Viktor Frankl.
With
less tragedy.
With more jokes.
Yeah, nicer start.
But the fact is that it's the story of my life. And I hope what it does is it gives people an opportunity to see what it's like just to grow up in America and the American dream, but then to realize if I don't know the meaning of it all, I can't enjoy it. I have to know what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of my life? Does life even have meaning? At Yale and those kinds of elite institutions, they sort of teach you that life has no meaning, but they don't have the courage.
It's well-curated nihilism.
Exactly. They don't have the courage to explain it or to say it, because it's too nasty. So they just sort of, pretend that it's not true, or that, on the weekends we've got alcohol and sports and get a really good job, and in a few decades it'll all be over. So my book is meant to be my
awesome
story.
Your book, Miracles, is unbelievable. Seven great men. And then you have seven other great men, right?
Seven more men, seven men, seven women.
Do you have seven women yet?
Seven women exist, of course. Oh. And seven more women is being worked on.
And you have Bonhoeffer?
Yes,
and then
I do.
If You Can Keep It.
If You Can Keep It.
I always get that and The Last Best Hope. I mean, that's Prager's book. I get them confused all the time.
Well, and of course, he ripped that off from Lincoln. I ripped my quote off from Franklin.
When
so that's
someone
the
came
difference.
Up to him.
That's
Eric, difference. You got to go to the stage. God bless you, man.
Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you guys want to support us at charliekirk.com/support, chip in some money if you can. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And please, get involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. Find out who's teaching your children at professorwatchlist.org. And if you want to find out if the Chinese Communist Party is present on your alma mater campus, go to chinaoncampus.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Make sure to listen to our episode on getting our kids to love America again. Thanks so much. God bless.